Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, senior editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guests on the program are Arkestro founder and chief strategy officer Edmund Zagorin and Johnson & Johnson chief procurement officer Len DeCandia. Arkestro is an AI-driven startup in the procurement space with broad partnerships across the automotive, construction, and manufacturing sectors, including Johnson & Johnson and Koch Industries. Together, the two discuss procurement from a distinct leadership perspective and the broad range of challenges from keeping talent ahead of scaling to the post-pandemic realities of recovering supply chains. Without further ado, here's their conversation with Emerge CEO and head of research, Daniel Fajella.
Edmund, Len, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to have you both with me here today. So we've got double the topics to unpack with two brains, so we'll fly right into it. I want to open on challenges and trends. I think people are sort of aware, even if they're not in supply chain, that the world is kind of complicated from a supply chain standpoint right now. And I think anybody that's making anything sort of gets that. Let's open with challenges and trends that matter for leaders now. Edmund, when you think about what the chief procurement officers that you talk to are basically worried about or thinking about all day, what comes to mind? What should leaders know?
You know, Dan, I'd say in 2024, it's never been harder or more important to lead a procurement team in the right way. What I hear from leaders is it's hard to find the right people for the work that needs to get done. We're looking for people that have data analytics skills and also a lot of soft skills, good relationship builders, and not just tactical kind of get the job done, but also strategic thinkers to forge those relationships. You're looking at immense challenges with the underlying data quality and the just ability to build a foundation around that data to kind of see what you've spent with whom across what geographies and of course product lines. And then turning that data into actions that can drive business impact, not just in terms of cost reductions and taking cost out of the business is a major priority for large enterprises right now, but also in terms of seeing around corners to avoid potential supply disruptions and stay smart about risks in the supply chain out there. If you look in manufacturing procurement, one challenge that we see, just to double click on, is data quality issues between individual plant locations and then a corporate procurement that creates duplicate records, missing records, all kinds of challenges in the underlying data. And so companies, many are embarking on transformational projects for the first time, understand their spend at the item level for every geography they operate in. And that's going to change how businesses operate, especially multinationals, especially those where getting it right matters.
When you talk about this difference between plant and corporate data, are you saying now they're more aware of how jarring those differences are and how rectified or how much they need to be rectified? Is this the sort of the thing that you're seeing among the brains in the space?
Well, look, there's always been challenges between just the manufacturer part number and the internal part number for coding a single item. But the challenge now that people are waking up to is, look, what companies want to do to save money is they want to leverage their demand at scale to unlock not just volume-based discounts, but overall kind of greater efficiencies in their supply chain, either ordering in bulk earlier from fewer trusted sources of supply or doing other things that just make the process overall more efficient and more scalable. And in order to do that, you have to know what you're buying and how much demand you're able to forecast forward. So the pressure in a lot of companies is, how can we get our demand forecast to be more granular, more specific, and more targeted for individual locations? Because that's how you unlock major cost reductions. And that's where people are running into this data challenge between the plant and corporate item level data quality.
Got it. Hopefully some more context for the folks tuned in. And I know that all of what you just articulated, and I know we're going to get deeper into data quality a little later in our chat here, which I'm looking forward to, is sitting and couched in a lot of geopolitical, global stuff that's kind of a big deal. People have given it a lot of names. Len, maybe you know what to call it, but talk to us a bit about the soup that we're sitting in and how it's affecting decision-making and, I guess, attitudes around procurement at present.
Yeah, I wrote a paper about 2 or 3 years ago called it The Era of Scarcity. And, you know, we have to be realistic about the situation we're living in right now. Yeah, I think it's the fourth anniversary of the pandemic, and it's been a 4-year global war against a virus. And usually when you go through something significant like that, it becomes an era of transformation. And I've been fortunate in my 40 plus years in supply chain of living in an era of what I called abundance. You know, it was the fall of the Berlin Wall. There was much more investment in globalization. We've seen significant leaps in technology. And we had incredible resources available to us relative to the workforce. Now, you know, coming through this post-pandemic era, we're dealing with larger macro issues, right? You have the issues around geopolitical issues. You have the impact of climate, and that continues to be a significant challenge. And you also have demographics. You know, we're seeing it in places like the United States and Japan and China. You know, the resources available, the talent available to do the work just isn't there like it was before. And, you know, you put that all together in supply chain, and then you look at where investment has been over the past 10, 20 years, and it's been mostly customer relationship management. You know, the ability for us at the B2B level or the B2C level to get what we want when we want it, and very customized as well. And by far, investment in the customer has really outpaced investment in the supplier base and investment in the employee. So now is a great time for those organizations to really rebalance those investments. And I think it manifests itself in what Edmund was saying around data. You know, having bad data is a choice. It's not something you have to live with, but it requires investment. It requires investment in people, and it requires investments in your relationships. And so if we are in an era of diversifying supply chain, moving more towards make it where you sell it, you're going to have to make significant investments in your talent and in your supply chain system, specifically procurement systems that help you manage those relationships that are critical to us.
Out of curiosity, I like the bad data as a choice as a, ooh, that's a tough one. But I love a good tough truth on the show. I might even say that's my greatest joy on this program is just like, here's stuff you got to deal with. So there's something to be said of that. To your point around, you know, technological investment, again, 40 years in procurement, you've kind of seen it all. And you've been in these giant Fortune 500s and you've seen where the cash has gone. Where's technology mm-hmm. leveled up? I certainly haven't been around for that long to be able to see where it's gone. But from your vantage point, the customers really had this more sparkling, amazing experience. The folks in the back end who are getting the nuts and bolts shipped in, the ingredients shipped in, who have to make the stuff, they're not getting leveled up in the same way. Is that simply because the ecosystem for vendors was more limited? Is it because leadership doesn't really know or identify as much with those wacky procurement problems as they do with the customer yelling at them on the phone? I mean, what has led to this lopsidedness that we've got to sort of, from your vantage point, kind of rectify here?
Yeah, supply wasn't the issue. The issue was demand. And so in order to drive demand, you're going to make that investment. What we learned during the pandemic is, yes, supply, you know what? Supply is more than just, you know, managing costs. It's managing growth now. You know, if you're able to get your product or your service to the customer when your competitor does not, then you're going to lose share. And more now more than ever, that's become a reality. And so that's where now investment in growth means more than just investment in the customer experience. You have to invest in your employee experience, and you have to invest in making sure you have a resilient and a secure supply chain.
That's a good way to frame it. Like historically, you know, supply was not the issue. So why would we, don't fix it if it ain't broke? Well, now we've got maybe reasons to start fixing what patently obviously is broke. Speaking of that, we're going to get into use cases around where data is waking up and starting to add value. It maybe in ways that traditional IT just could not over your 40 years in this space. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you'd want to identify or kind of highlight as those opportunity areas for other leaders tuned in?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the era of the big, massive enterprise resource planning systems, right? And so we made huge investments, hundreds of millions of dollars, multiple systems. And then we kind of evolved into a world where many of the multinational companies have so many of these systems and they're disparate. They don't communicate with one another. The information isn't harmonized, on and on and on. And, you know, I think it was a wonderful era for CIOs because they were elevated. They started to become, people on executive teams, and they had big teams managing that technology. But over the past 10 plus years of my career, what I saw in this shift towards, you know, cloud-based technology, that's all outsourced now. So reality is the procurement organization plays a more significant role in that space because now all of those competencies and skills that you used to invest in internally is now done externally. And you have greater access in other areas of the company, like research and development, marketing and sales. And so fundamentally, a lot of the technology investments that companies are making are cloud-based, managed to a third party. And the relationship now is between the functions and those technology providers. It's not being funneled through an IT organization. Therefore, these organizations really need to think about how they're going to use technology and how they're going to translate that technology to their own practices within their own organization. It's a big leap from the old days.
I'm getting all these flashing ideas about an entirely new podcast format where we just talk about like core cultural and org chart changes that have fundamentally shifted how we need to think about the future, because it's its own pair of goggles. Like, you've lived in it for so long, you're just talking out loud. But I was like, that's actually an interesting lens. And of course, it leads us to the boots on the ground work that's going to be done with all of this. It's more setting the table around context of how important this is. Edmund, from your vantage point, seeing AI or data come to life and add value in procurement, if you could highlight kind of pockets where you think leadership really should be on the lookout for where those leaps can be, for where strategic advantage can be garnered, what should folks know?
I think the new paradigm around AI that I think personally is just very exciting is that you can use machine learning models to clean historic data and actually run processes that validate values or components of this data in a way that you really just couldn't before. And so I think for a lot of companies, they've had it drilled into their head, hey, get your data clean first, get your people in the right roles, get your org chart right, get your change processes, get some base level systems in place, and then only then take a look at AI, right? That's kind of been, AI is the icing on a cake. Most people never make the cake. So AI is something they're thinking about very far down the line. What has happened is that as AI has become more ubiquitous, as these machine learning models have gotten better, there are many applications in not just cleansing and structuring the underlying foundational data, but putting it to work in live processes. And so one of the things that we're seeing now is this explosion in what analysts are calling procurement orchestration. And so this is taking data, putting it into a live procurement process, whether it's a table that's being sent to a supplier so that the supplier can review it, whether it's a set of documents, whatever the action is, that's getting orchestrated through a set of processes that are being powered by machine learning models. And one of the really exciting things and what Orchestro has been supporting customers in is a journey not just for procurement orchestration, but what we call predictive procurement orchestration. And so this is this idea that if you can know what the end of a process is going to look like before that process begins, then you have a way of measuring its success in a way that's really exciting. And it gives you some kind of foundation to stand on as you're measuring whether that process is getting quotes from suppliers, whether it's understanding if you're getting good pricing, measuring the performance of a supply chain. There's all kinds of tasks where data is involved, and we're excited about the role that predictive models is playing in some of these use cases and jobs, tasks that exist throughout procurement operations and supply chains.
And I think when people think about what that looks like in practice, the immediate image is that, okay, there's going to be a new dashboard to look at that would show me these cool predictive things that'll be happening. It'll look very fancy, but this can manifest in a UI standpoint in relatively simple ways. I know this because I was on that panel at your event a year and a half ago. I got to see a little bit of what it looks like under the hood, which in some ways I think is counterintuitive to, fancy new tech. Surely it must be a fancy new user interface. When this predictive thing hits the ground running and turns into smarter decisions day to day for procurement professionals, talk about how you guys manifest that and also why you made that choice. Because I think there's an interesting thing here around, how much workflow change people can bear or not bear. And I think it's worth unpacking.
Yeah, I think just from a design standpoint, a lot of procurement work gets done in email today. We made a design choice to really meet the profession where it is and meet the supply chain where it is in a UI that's really integrated within email. And so it's really simple. There's not a login or setup or a kind of extensive onboarding that's required. We were really inspired by DocuSign that took a very complex process in document review and approvals and made it really simple. And so that's some of the ways that we think about how in AI, we have this idea called best next step, or just best next action, that you can look at a process and use predictive models to make intelligent recommendations to the user throughout the process. And that's something that that combined with the email, I think as far as change management goes, has made it really easy. And keep in mind, we focus on industries like that in many cases have not had a lot of digital transformation, right? Supplier bases that might be providing valves or pipes or, you know, a whole range of things, and where they're not used to using most digital apps or systems. And so we have to make it really clean, really simple, really, really, really intuitive to use.
And that gets into, so I think super relevant lesson, has a lot of credence across many industries. I think eventually there'll be more fundamental change in some sort of workflows, but I think in many regards, the simpler, the better. And you guys have sort of proven that out, at least with your adoption and growth here. Speaking about your valves people, you know, who don't have big in-house data science teams, even if they make a tremendous amount of revenue, it's just not their world, right? It's not where they've had to focus. They've gotten good at working with steel and iron and whatever, and this has just not been their area of competence. That feeds pretty squarely into the data issue you were talking about. You know, folks like that are communicating with folks that are more advanced, and there's a whole spectrum in between, and they all still need the same benefit. They all want predictive to come to life. What's a good way of thinking? You know, there's some folks that are going to be tuned in who are like, well, my data is not great. What's a good way of thinking about where AI over the years ahead, maybe we'll be able to chip away what parts or facets of that can be cleaned up with, in large part, the aid of artificial intelligence? Because again, I know this is part of your mix here.
Well, and I think that's really the difference between the old world and the new world, where in the old world, you needed to have in-house data scientists. You needed to have experts that had technical background in some of these change management, digital transformation topics. I think that increasingly companies and, you know, we work with some great companies that make valves and fittings and lots of industrial parts, and also very complex capital expenditure, capital equipment. And that's their bread and butter. They shouldn't also have, like, when they talk about AI, they're talking about like predictive maintenance on their physical assets. They shouldn't also have to become, you know, necessarily proficient at AI and business, you know, predictive business process. And that's where I think the rise of some of these relatively turnkey solutions that aren't like the traditional ERPs that take months or even years to go through these complex implementations, but solutions that can deliver material benefits in a matter of days or weeks. That's really the future of AI in this space, because you'll have business leaders who say, look, I don't need to understand it. I don't want to understand it. I just want to see, is this going to impact my P&L?
That's safe to say is most business leaders, at least from my vantage point. I see an eventual future where a lot of these core clunky systems do kind of level up, and there'll be dinosaurs that kind of can never get off of them and whatever. But certainly where we are now, we're just at the beginning of this AI cusp. Nobody's going to overhaul everything. You know, there is a longer term vision here, but I think in terms of making payroll, delivering product, to your point, sometimes let's go with what the execs want, because that's what's going to be realistic. And speaking of what execs want, we should also speak about how execs should be thinking about the future and thinking about the transition, Edmund, you were just talking about. So Len, to you, there's leaders tuned in, VP folks working in the procurement space, looking at their own data, being like, man, this is a bad choice. Len told me this was a choice and this was a tough one. But they're also excited about, maybe this could be my strategic advantage. If I can make closer to where I sell, if I can have better sort of costing on a more consistent basis, and I can know when things are going to arrive and how much I can produce, that could be a great advantage. Where should they begin from a mindset perspective, a tactical perspective, to make sure that these early moves into AI are moves that translate to ROI?
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at least those who have embraced, you know, the digital world, right? So at least you have some early adopters and hopefully some fast followers behind all of that, because, you know, in my experience, you just have that normal curve of the early adopters and fast followers. I think you could do that in the past. I don't know at the pace of the world today if you can sit back and wait for someone else to do it. You know, I get frustrated sometimes because I hear a lot of enthusiasm for AI, and then when you hear on calls, at least from various CEOs and CFOs, are just simple use cases. And you know that they really aren't ready to make that journey from a use case to expanding it across the enterprise and making it happen. So it puts a lot of the burden on the procurement leader or the supply chain leader to really be the influencer in all of this and be able to transition that. They have to embrace simplification of practices. And I'll give you an example, Dan. My last recent assignment was with Johnson & Johnson, a company that I was away from for 18 years and went back and had to harmonize a global procurement organization, an organization that was decentralized in procurement for 130 years, right? So you had 90,000 suppliers around the world, 200 different procurement processes and practices around the world, no contracts anywhere, maybe in somebody's drawer, right? And just that type of environment. And we really, with great support from leadership, you know, went and simplified some of our practices and some of our processes to change the way people work. Now, when you go through these types of transformations as a procurement organization, you have to recognize that you're not just taking your team on a journey, you're taking every one of the internal budget owners on a journey. So I think those leaders who recognize that when they have to embrace this type of change and the value of this type of change, they have to be ready to make the transition from the science of what they're doing to the storytelling aspects of it, so that those internal budget owners can really recognize and understand the tremendous value that will be there for them. So let's talk about that experience. It went from 90,000 to 44,000 suppliers, but a more diverse base of suppliers with multiple contracts in place and great governance. But because there were contracts in place and because there was great governance and because there was the ability to leverage success from one site to another where there was common use, what would take 6 weeks to initiate a supplier was more like 6 to 12 hours, right? So now what you're able to do is really empower and enable the budget owner. So if you take the case of just a manufacturing plant, if I'm a supervisor running a line and a line goes down because of a missing spare part and I'm down for 3 days because nobody really understands what the part is, who we buy it from, what the part number is. I'm down for 3 days, not making production. But I have an integrated system that has all of those insights. I could be back up in a matter of hours, right? So I think that's the issue for those leaders. It's being able to take the process and build the bridge from the value of investment into this to the positive outcomes for the internal budget owners. And that's an important competency and skill that I think many professionals in my space are still developing. And that's an important part of this successful journey, is how quickly can they accelerate those skills and come from other parts of the business as well, where those skills are more, I think, applicable now to procurement than they have been in the past.
You mentioned storytelling a bit here. I'd love to get into that. I mean, we've seen time and time again over the last, 8 years doing this, the culture change part is the really tough part for enterprise AI in many regards, harder than the data, harder than other things. And that whoever is to be an AI catalyst is somewhat by definition to be an educator and a kindler of enthusiasm at the same time. It's essentially impossible to garner change at scale without doing that. Whether it's a VP somewhere or it's coming all the way from the top, it's somebody's teaching as they go and they touch the data scientists, the subject matter experts. That takes a certain kind of person. For you, when you think about what those elements of storytelling are, you know, that someone can get better at and make sure to really put emphasis on to have a higher likelihood of leveling up the people around them and of getting on that similar mindset, where could they focus? Storytelling is a big skill, but how would you break it down?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of strong skills in data analytics, right, that come with the evolution of the function and type of work that goes on there. I think the ability for storytelling really becomes, first and foremost, is you really have to understand the audience. So if you don't really understand your internal business partner, your external business partner, with a level of empathy and a level of understanding with the pressures that they're under and what they're interested in, it's really difficult because you're telling a story to an audience that's really not interested in listening to your version of the story. And I think that's probably the most important change aspect of it. Yeah, I talked about my recent assignment. I'll be as clear as I possibly can be. I've done 4 or 5 of these transformations. And if you look at the great team, but the leadership team, and we had somewhere in the area of 25, 26 either vice presidents and senior vice presidents, we turned over about 80%, right? That's a lot of turnover. Now, a lot of it was not because they didn't have the competence and skill to it. Some people just weren't interested in making that journey, right? So you have to find those within the organization that are interested and elevate them. I'm a big proponent of just where you find that talent, they could be buried somewhere in the organization. You change the definition of what a successful contributor looks like and you give them the chance. And then others who are much more comfortable working in an environment where, you know, they can just focus on the analytics aspect of it and not be able to make that translation. I think that's really what's important with AI is everyone, and I think Edmund hit the nail on the head, everyone's talking about the technical aspect. And then what he's hearing from a lot of leaders is, I don't need to know the technical. I need to know how to translate this into value. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity in doing that. And we can talk more about that as we get closer to discussions around culture.
Big time. Well, culture and courage is what you said off microphone. And That's right. Like, we're going to have to touch on that, Len, because I know for a fact everybody tuned in needs more of it. Edmund, I wouldn't want to wrap on the topic without seeing if there's anything else that you wanted to chip in. And Len, if you want to chip in as well, when you think, Edmund, about your various conversations with leaders, some of them are having great journeys, some of them not so great. Any takeaways on how to think about the start of the journey so you have the highest likelihood of that win at the end?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look, we're in a period of time where the opportunity to go fast and hit a home run has never been higher on technology. And so it's really, I think, just focusing on responsible speed. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you see a project where someone's coming in and describing a two-year roadmap, well, 2 years from now, technology could look very different, right? Like the pace of change is moving so fast. And so one of the things that, you know, Arkestra's customers have challenged on is to say, hey, we really want to see something that's going to be reportable and tangible in a matter of weeks, you know, typically 2 to 6 weeks. And depending on the size of the company and the complexity of the category. And I would say that all people listening to this should have that same framework of, let's figure out the right way to measure success in terms of return on investment, but getting results fast, I think, is a major difference. And then I think that, you know, we're leaving what I've heard some people call the era of learned helplessness into the era where, yes, if you have bad data, it's a choice, right? You know, someone asked Taylor Swift about how her jet lag was at the Super Bowl, and she said, jet lag's a choice. Hearing Len say that, I was like, you know, it's true, right? You can take some stuff, you get the right sleep, you make sure you plan ahead and so on. And I think that it's hard to hear. It's definitely requires investment, and it definitely requires some stick-to-itiveness and out-of-the-box thinking, and it definitely requires a conversation about culture. But if you have culture and courage, you can stand up and say, what the only thing that we should all agree on is it can't look like this 6 months, a year from now. How do we get there? And then how do we reverse engineer a game plan for success? And I think that's something that procurement and supply chain leaders are doing in lots of different industries and lots of different companies to say, we need to see around corners. We need to be more running towards the problems that we've struggled with in the past, overcoming them systematically, and then looking towards the future. And then we need to build in resiliency and responsibility into the organization so that we're not running too fast and recreating some of the same challenges. So I think it's a great time to be doing this work. You know, procurement operations is not historically the sexiest part of many companies, but it's critical work. It's the backbone on which goods and services enter the company, and it's a tremendous amount of financial responsibility as well.
It certainly is, Edmund. And I think, you know, the important stuff is what we talk about here. And I would certainly say that, to reverb off of what Len was saying, culture is awful important. Len, let's end on this. You know, making culture something actionable is tough. Again, a broad concept. Unpack a little bit from your vantage point how procurement leaders should think through culture and changing culture, because you've done it and it's a tough job.
It's an impossible job sometimes, right? You know, first off, you need strong sponsorship from the highest level of the organization. And really, as a leader, you know, you have to navigate around the blamers and complainers. You know, they live in the past and they're really the ones that, you know, you have to come up with strategies to deal with them because they're not going to go away, but you've got to work your way around it. So if you look at the procurement function and what AI technology in an organization like Orchestra brings to the table, it brings to the table the ability to do what we would traditionally call category management, you know, request for proposals, request for information, bidding, and whatever else. And the reality is you've built so much of a history around that, and there's so much internal data that you can connect to external data with the types of tools Orchestra brings. And here's where the quantum leap is for organizations that really have the courage to take on the culture. The reality is the number one competency procurement brings to any organization is supplier relationship management. And it's not a world where the supplier is always wrong and the supplier manages all the costs. It's a shared world where internal customers are probably the biggest offenders when it comes to cost. They're not clear on what they want. They don't understand what they want or when they want it. Now, the reality is, if procurement can use AI tools to help them with managing and constantly monitoring the external environment, how do they use that those insights and that information to influence and shape the way the internal budget owner really looks at and works with the supplier to drive execution? And I think that's where most programs fail. You know, back in the original days of ERP systems, only a third were successful. In today's world, less than 50% technology investments are successful. It's all about culture. And that's where the courage to take on those challenges and the ability to shape the culture where procurement becomes the enabler. It's the tide that lifts all boats. We mentioned earlier, everyone works with suppliers. Any function or any organization is given two resources to execute their business plan. They're given people and they're given budgets. We have HR organizations that spend a lot of time training them how to be good managers. We need procurement people training them how to be good supplier relationship managers, because those budgets are spent with third parties. And I think that's the incredible enabler of AI. The AI will empower and enable the procurement organization to really bring tremendous value to the internal aspects of the organization. It's using your budgets to drive greater efficiencies through better partnering and better understanding of external capabilities that complement your internal capabilities to achieve objectives. For me, I've walked into so many scenarios where it was go beat up the supplier. And I spent 90% of my time teaching my organization how to be a better customer. That's how we're able to double and triple the value that we originally thought we could capture. That's the first 100 days of starting to position that story. So as the world evolves over the next 1,000, you're in front of it because you have your organization with you trying to manage that change. That, I think, is the incredible value of AI. Those CFOs, those CEOs who recognize that their organization needs to get a lot better in how they spend the shareholders' money, where they spend it, and whom they spend it with, are going to recognize the value of AI and the value of investing in tremendous procurement talent and the technology to support that procurement.
This is like a whole nother podcast unto itself, Len. You had to do this to me, huh? No, but this is, I like this point to end on because I think there is a bit of a counterintuitive element here. I certainly have not come up in supply chain. We cover all kinds of enterprise applications, supply chain one of many. I think people do think, well, you're just going to try to get the best price. This dynamic of, hey, this is just like you need management at scale for your internal folks, you need management at scale for all the external folks. It should be seen as a skill set, a way of, you know, when you manage your internal folks, you're not grinding out as much as you can in the next 2 hours. You want to keep them around here and have a good relationship that's long-term fruitful. Same thing with your suppliers. Total mindset shift. I'm going to try to nutshell this, and I'd love for you to correct me before we wrap up, because I think that there's something to capture here and I don't quite have it yet. The idea feels to me like, okay, if we're more transparent in our data, we understand our own history, what the pricing in the world is, we can sort of lay on the table something objective as a starting place for our supplier conversations. Maybe we can be a little bit less willy-nilly and say, well, just whatever they get us, let's beat them up. You know, maybe that's one way we can improve the relationship. But how else should we nutshell this? Hey, you know, with data, with AI, with the ability to sort of look objectively and understand trends in pricing and be more intelligent, here's how the relationships improve. What should click for the listeners right now?
Yeah, so in essence, it's really about making sure that there's a true understanding of the problem you're trying to solve, right? And the context of what you're trying to solve that problem with an external third party. It could be as simple as finding the most available, most ready spare part that fits in your factory. Or, you know, I was part of launching a vaccine for the pandemic within 12 months, finding the right clinical research organization that could allow you to deploy the most diverse 45,000 patient and clinical study in order to help save the world within 60 days, right? So these are real big world issues. And the reality is procurement is the organization's window of what's available and out there in the world. So it's not about, hey, here's who I used last time I did this big, or here's who somebody down the hall used last time. It's who's the best partner in the world for this particular problem I'm trying to solve at this particular value. And I think that's a quantum leap. Finance organizations basically say once a year, here's your budget, don't overspend. I think they need to be more dynamic. Finance organizations say, what are the problems you're trying to solve? Let's work with procurement and let's find out what it should cost to be able to solve that problem. And that is the AI world. It's not let's cut the budget once a year and we'll spend the rest of the year making sure we land this thing. It's every day that window is changing. What's our window to the world and how we're going to best use the resources available to us, both internally and externally, to achieve our objectives. That's the big jump.
Well, I for the listeners tuned in, you may not have known that this is a culture crash course, but today that is exactly what you got. And you also got a whole bunch of hands-on insight around where AI and data are making their difference. Lots of really cool industry-level trend insight from you guys today. Most fun part of my job is getting really smart people to talk about what they know best, and I've done that two times over in this episode. So, Len, Ed, thanks so much for being with me here today.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Wrapping up today's episode, if you're coming from the automotive space and searching for the same expertise a little bit more curtailed to your specific industry, don't forget to check out Edmund's episode from November 2022 titled Streamlining Automotive Purchasing with AI. On behalf of Daniel Fajella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI and Business Podcast.